Philip II of Macedonia, Prince Alexander, Part 3, The Arrival of Aristotle. Now, when Alexander was 13 or 14, a new tutor was decided upon, and after some consideration, Philip chose Aristotle. The native of Chalcedon, the philosopher was 40 and not yet as celebrated as he would become. His father had been a royal physician under Amasis III, and so there was an acquaintance and a connection with the family. Aristotle had studied under Plato, although he did not succeed him as the head of the academy, and left Athens shortly after Plato's death. He went first to Asia Minor, to the court of the tyrant Hermias, whose adopted daughter he later married. The move to Macedonia around 342 BCE was no doubt financially attractive, and also meant that he was not caught up years later in the torture and execution of Hermias for rebellion against the Persian king. Aristotle and Alexander were set up in a precinct at the Shrine of the Nymphs at Mysa, which removed them from the court at Pella. Once again, we do not know whether any friends or some or all of the similar-aged pages were taught alongside the prince. Probably learning under the philosopher went alongside continuing training in arms and other physical pursuits such as hunting. Aristotle taught politics, ethics, and sparked or encouraged Alexander and the interest in the natural world, especially medicine and healing. For the best part of 3 years, the philosopher taught the prince, although how gifted a pupil he was depends mainly on how each modern scholar views Alexander. Inevitably, the meeting of the two of the most famous names in the ancient world excite our interest, but as usual, the meager evidence prevents us from saying anything definitive on what passed between them. Aristotle prepared a condensed and annotated text for the Iliad for his pupil, which Alexander took on all of his campaigns, keeping it alongside his dagger under his bed. As a man, Alexander was much shorter than the average Greek and Macedonian of the 4th century BCE. Although small in stature, Alexander was well-proportioned, strong, and a good sprinter, all of which reinforces the sense of constant physical training. His complexion was fair, skin sometimes ruddy, and his hair described as tawny like a lion's, and so not quite the peroxide blonde of Hollywood. His eyes were odd-colored, one blue-gray and the other brown, which may have contributed to his unusual and sometimes off-putting gaze. At some stage, he developed the habit of leaning his head a little to the left and staring upwards, presumably higher than the taller men often standing around him. Most, perhaps all, of the stories about his youth were embellished or invented in later years. The exchanges with Philip center around Alexander's desire for honor and glory. And here was an even greater son of a great father, and they made use of well-worn aphorisms. For instance, that the king's wounds were visible badges of courage, more to be prized than any other trophies. Another theme is the boy's instinctive challenge to any attempt to restrict him. Leonidas, his first teacher, is said to have chided Alexander for using too much expensive incense during a sacrifice. A decade later, the conqueror Alexander of Asia sent his former tutor a staggering 18 tons of frankincense and myrrh with the advice that he should no longer be mean in his offerings to the gods. Determination, restless ambition, and absolute faith in his own abilities, which usually was backed by proof that he was right, run through these stories. There are no stories of Alexander failing. There is only impatience. He is supposed to have complained whenever news came of Philip's latest victory, and his father was leaving less and less for him to achieve. When a Persian delegation arrived at Pella in the king's absence, Alexander received them, impressing the ambassadors by asking precise and pertinent questions about Persian military strength, as well as roads and communications. The young prince of these stories display the same quality, or at least the ones thought to be admirable to Greeks, as the king who would conquer much of the world. Given what the man did, it would be no surprise if the boy was so precocious, focused, and talented, and also entirely natural for people to invent such stories fresh out of what little there was actually known. Now, Philip may well have been pleased and proud of Alexander, which didn't mean that his attitude towards him could not change, or that another son could be born and eventually supplant him. Little of Philip's time was devoted to thoughts or long-term future, let alone succession, for he always had plenty to do and the present was his priority. He was always busy, and some acts can have taken a long time and a lot of care. Justin says that Philip embarked on major reform once he returned home from the Sacred War, establishing new communities, often in border areas, and moving much of the population. As shepherds drive their flocks, sometimes in the winter, sometimes in the summer pastures, he transplanted his people and cities, causing widespread misery amongst those ripped from their ancestral homes. As we have seen, he had begun this process early in his reign, so perhaps there was a special intense burst of activity from late 346 BCE onward, or Justin, or a source, chose to describe a long-term plan at this point. Willing or not, the people were moved, and as far as we can tell, Philip's new communities and their mixed population all succeeded, many becoming recruiting and training centers for the army. So, it's time for Philip to go back out on the battlefield again, do some campaigning. Now, the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.